Roy Nathanson's Sotto Voce will be over at the Stone for a 10 p.m. show. Bedouin Sound Clash and De Leon will be over at Mercury Lounge. The Slavic Soul Party for the Tuesday night show at Barbe's. John Hammond will be over at the City Winery. To send your show in to WUSB Concert Billboard, send an email to scene, S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. And listen to the Rock and Roll Dance Party every Tuesday night at 9 p.m., only on WUSB Stony Brook.
And you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook, where the time is 6:02. Time once again for Off the Wall. Sounds like we have another phone ringing in North Korea. Actually going to give this one another try this week. Last week it rang and rang and nobody ever picked up, and that's definitely a phone somewhere in North Korea. And if this doesn't work this week, we're just going to put in a different number next week, and eventually we'll get through to somebody over there. I mean, I just want to say congratulations for making it into the World Cup. That's amazing. Yeah, I actually watched the game last Wednesday. What I had to go through to get it, it wasn't aired on television. I had to go onto the internet and actually buy it. I've never done that before. And it worked. It worked rather well, actually. And I was able to watch the game right before my other radio show. And it was exciting. A scoreless draw, but it was still exciting. But the end result meant that North Korea made it to the World Cup for the first time since 1966. And they made it all the way to the quarterfinals that time. Almost into the semifinals. They really blew a game with Portugal, but that's ancient history. This is the first time ever, though, in recorded history, that North Korea and South Korea will be in the same World Cup. So that's going to be fascinating. It's fascinating just to watch how it all unfolds and see how people react. And, you know, so far, I have to say, I've been proven wrong as far as the result of this victory. Those reporters have not been let go yet, and I'm kind of surprised they haven't been in the news at all. referring to the American reporters who were captured after allegedly wandering into North Korean territory at the Chinese border. Sentenced to, was it 12 years hard labor? Well, any period of hard labor over there is not a good thing. So we're all hoping they get out sometime soon. I just thought the World Cup, you know, that would cheer everybody up, and maybe things wouldn't be so bad. But, you know, things seem to be getting worse. Things seem to be really heading down a bad road. But if you look through all the nonsense, this isn't going to pick up, is it? No, but it's interesting to listen to a ring, isn't it? At some point, it's going to disconnect, and that should be pretty soon. Maybe we'll try it later on, but we're not going to annoy people with this sound. Not for very much longer, anyway. But there was a story that came out last week, which I thought was pretty interesting. The headline basically read, U.S. ready against North Korea strike. Now, they're not talking about a strike of the auto workers or something like that. They're talking about a military strike. Now, does this make any sense to anybody? Think about it. North Korea striking the United States. Do you really think that would result in something positive for anybody? It makes so little sense. I think it's a bunch of saber-rattling and attempts to get us afraid and willing to do otherwise irrational things. But listen to the story. It's very brief, but significant. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said the United States could defend itself. Yes, we could defend ourselves in the event of a North Korean missile launch towards Hawaii. What a relief. You know, I was afraid that North Korea was going to overrun this country. And before you know it, you know, everybody would be speaking, North Korean? Yeah. Come on. I mean, what? I don't know what they're trying to prove here. I really don't. Anyway, according to Japanese media last Thursday, and this is the real kicker, North Koreans are preparing to make such a launch. Whoa. So, according to Japanese media, quote-unquote Japanese media, we won't say exactly who. Oh, look, it disconnected. Okay, well, we'll try North Korea later on. According to this unnamed Japanese media, the North Koreans are actually planning on lobbing a missile towards the United States. Now, the phrasing here is also rather interesting. We don't own a direction. So, towards the United States, you know, you could throw a rock towards the United States and it would go 20 feet. All right, so what exactly does that mean, launching a rocket towards the United States? The way the story reads, it makes it sound like they're aiming for Hawaii. We can defend ourselves in the event of a North Korean missile launch towards Hawaii. And the North Koreans are preparing to do just that. You know, even if they lob a missile 100 miles in the direction of Hawaii, that's not the same thing as hitting Hawaii, is it? Anyway, with missile interceptors and radar equipment in the region, we are in a good position should it become necessary to protect the American territory. So Gates seems to think that they're going to actually launch a missile to hit the United States. And then you have to ask yourself, why in God's name would even an insane person do that? What could possibly be in it for them? There's nobody on their side in the whole world, except maybe Myanmar, and that's a whole other story. But it's just such a preposterous scenario. I'm almost tempted to just see what happens if it plays out, because it's just that bizarre and unusual. Now, we know North Korea does a lot of saber-rattling, you know, on their own terms. They love to make all kinds of dire threats. Surely we've learned this by now. Anyway, the United States is also, and this is going to be interesting, they're tracking a North Korean ship which is believed to be carrying illicit weapons or technology. Now, okay, I don't know what illicit weapons or illicit technology exactly means, but I do know that we probably have some of it right here on campus. You see, the United States, we're allowed to have these things. We're allowed to have as many illicit weapons and as many bits of illicit technology, whatever that means, as we desire, because we're the good guys. But they're the bad guys, and we don't understand why the bad guys don't understand that they're the bad guys. You know, and because of that, they shouldn't be allowed to have the same things that we're allowed to have. Simple enough. But for some reason, whenever you try to explain it to the bad guys, they get all huffy. And they, you know, they start making all kinds of insults and things. Like they're taking it the wrong way. Well, any event, the United States does not know what specifically is on the ship, but they'd sure like to find out. They say the Kang Nam, which is the name of the ship, is a repeat offender known for having carried proliferation materials. Proliferation materials. Okay, whatever. You know, here's the thing. They're actually, the speculation that they're taking this ship to none other than Myanmar, you know, formerly known as Burma. And this is also kind of a crazy regime that doesn't really follow anything the UN says. And, of course, the United States doesn't do that either when it suits them. But for the most part, Myanmar and North Korea are two nations which kind of live on their own terms. Don't really care what the rest of the world thinks. They're kind of like, you know, the kids with blue hair that don't study as much as they should. If you want to draw an analogy. That's North Korea and Myanmar. So you have North Korea sending this ship to Myanmar, and the two of them are saying, you know what, rest of the world, keep out of our affairs. Do not meddle with us. We're not to be trifled with. How do you get around that? Should you get around that? Is it any of our business? These two want to trade baseball cards or nuclear missiles or whatnot. How is it any of our business when we do the same thing all the time? Constantly sending weapons to various places. Starting all kinds of civil unrest. And no, I don't think we started the civil unrest in Iran. But we could get blamed for it if we aren't careful with the way we encourage certain people. We meaning a government. Obviously, individuals are more than welcome to go out there and encourage all kinds of movements. From freedom fighters to I guess regimes that we don't agree with. We, again, meaning our government. Brings to mind a lot of people who supported the Taliban when they weren't known as a terrorist organization, when they were a government of a country. People supported them. And then they were labeled enemy combatants for supporting a terrorist organization after they were then labeled terrorists. It's crazy. It really is. Anyway, North Korea today is warning the world to stay out of parts of its eastern waters for 16 days. Starting tomorrow. No, actually starting Thursday. They say they will be holding a military drill and we are not invited. North Korea's hydrographic department emailed Japan's Coast Guard on Monday. They emailed them. Thought they didn't have much internet access. In fact, I thought the internet access went through Japan, so it wasn't much of an email. North Korea plans to hold military shooting practice in the waters northeast of Wonsan on the country's eastern coast from June 25th to July 10th. That's according to the email. The reclusive communist nation did not specify consequences of ships entering those waters during the drill, but the dates fall within the time frame cited by Japanese media last week for a possible North Korea missile launch. Again, towards Hawaii. So, yeah, something's up. And the North issued a similar notice in April when they launched a long-range rocket, where they tested one. Since the April 5th launch, Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, has considered almost any opposition a declaration of war, including U.N. Security Council sanctions and participation in the U.S.-led Proliferation Security Initiative. And what that is boarding boats and searching them without the permission of the people on the boats. Or with the coerced permission. So, yeah, that's looks like it's going to get very interesting over there. But, you know, all that notwithstanding, kudos for getting into the World Cup. It's really an accomplishment. Let's hope it leads to something a little bit better than this. Yeah. What else is going on? We're going to try to take phone calls a little later on. Having a bit of trouble with the phones, but I think they're working now. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Take phone calls maybe in about, 15 minutes or so. Yeah. Where shall we go? Well, you know, we did some talking last week about wildlife in the insect kingdom anyway, and various stories of strange creatures that appear. This week, the creatures seem to be fireflies. Fireflies are in the area. If you look outside, and right about twilight, maybe in about an hour or so, you'll see lightning bugs, fireflies everywhere. And that's in the Northeast. That's here on Long Island. I've also seen them in New York City, which is pretty cool. And I have to say, of all the insects, I think fireflies are my favorite insect. It's because if you look at them, they keep themselves neatly manicured. They have that nice, like, orange head, and then kind of the neatly combed black body. And they're also very friendly. If you hold out your finger and there's a firefly nearby, he will almost always land on it just to say hi or rest or whatever. They're very friendly insects. They don't run around like they've got something to hide. They're not messy or slobby. And they emit a pleasant image of a light for some reason. And that only serves to entertain humans, of course. So I'd like to know from our listeners, and you could write to us or call us, what is your favorite insect? Just kind of taking a random poll. And I can tell you, my favorite insect is definitely not giant moths that fly into your house in the middle of the night. That's definitely not one of them. And not really fond of wormy type creatures or slithering things like that. Spiders are okay, but they're not insects, so don't even try with that. I like spiders. They know what's going on. OTW@2600.com is our email address if you have any thoughts about that. Meanwhile, I don't know if you saw this last week, but President Obama, he actually killed on the air. Yeah, they were setting up for an interview, and he swatted a fly right there on camera. Apparently, he didn't know the camera was on, but he got this look in his eye, and he just, without even pursuing any other options, murdered the fly. And seemed to almost boast about it. Yeah, seemed to almost be happy that he was able to take out the fly in one shot. Pointed to its carcass lying on the floor. Barbaric. And I know I'm not the only one who feels this way, because the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals issued a statement. And they're sending President Obama a humane bug catcher. It's a device that allows people to trap houseflies and release them outside. Now, you know, I was talking about this last week, how I try and release insects whenever possible, especially if they're, you know, if they just got into the house by accident and they didn't really mean to be there. Don't really have a problem just scooping them up and throwing them outside. If I see them again, though, you know, it might be a different story. But flies, house flies, you know, they're really annoying. They're one of those insects that are not my favorites. So, yeah, but they do have these devices. I shouldn't laugh, because people laugh at me for letting spiders go and trying to save giant moths. We support compassion even for the most curious, smallest, and least sympathetic animals, said PETA spokesman Bruce Friedrich a week ago tomorrow, last Wednesday. We believe that people, where they can be compassionate, should be for all animals. During an interview for CNBC at the White House last Tuesday, a fly intruded on Obama's conversation with correspondent John Harward. "Get out of here," the president told the pesky insect. And when it didn't, he waited for the fly to settle. He put his hand up and then smacked it dead. Our president did this. Now, where were we Obama asked Harwood, as if nothing had happened. And then, this is the kicker, he said, "That was pretty impressive, wasn't it? I got the sucker." Oh, Republicans, you must be happy. You must be happy, yeah. This is the kind of thing you've been crying out for. Well, now you got it. Now you have it. I'll tell you something, Ralph Nader would never have done that. Ron Paul never could have done that. Oh, I'm going to get mail. Anyway, Frederick said that PETA was pleased with Obama's voting record in the Senate on behalf of animal rights and noted that he has been outspoken against animal abuses. Still, swatting a fly on TV indicates he's not perfect, and we're happy to say that we wish he hadn't. The White House had no comment. Moving on to other animals, this was amazing. This was an incredible story that appeared in the New York Times last week about the mayor of 7th Street. The mayor of 7th Street, known as Pretty Boy, a dignified white cat who had a confident swagger and a distaste for rainy weather. And this week, Pretty Boy is having a funeral after 22 years on this earth. He was a local fixture for over a decade, making his rounds on the south side of the block between First Avenue and Avenue A, as shops opened and closed and renters moved in and out. His death last month of natural causes unleashed a storm of emotion. A business owner broke into tears at his mention. One young resident wept through a rehearsal for a kindergarten graduation. And Herbie, a disheveled supermodel of a cat who used to live with Pretty Boy at Mikey's pet shop, has retreated behind bags of cat litter to grieve privately. "Every day I cry," said Betty Knapp, who used to work at Mikey's pet shop. "Pretty Boy used to rest on her chest when her blood pressure rose," she said, "and it helped to calm her down." Now she burst into sobs when she talks about him. "He knew he was the man. He was the man on East 7th Street. Everybody just loved him." You know, I think I might have actually met this cat once. I was at a corner cafe on 7th and A, and I remember a cat coming up to the table and just sort of hanging out. And I think it was white. It might have been Pretty Boy. While accounts differ on exactly when Pretty Boy appeared on the block, Mikey Diaz, the owner of the pet store, said he had strutted in and leapt onto the counter shortly after the store opened in this spot in 1998. Pretty Boy started sleeping in the shop at night and was later joined by Herbie. During the day, Pretty Boy ventured a few doors down to a hair salon where he perched on the reception counter and leapt onto the laps of customers. And some days he swaggered through a Swiss restaurant on the block. But the turnover of shops on the block meant changes for Pretty Boy. The new owners of the hair salon were allergic to cats and didn't appreciate him coming by. The Swiss restaurant closed down. And so he basically made his way around making new friends over the years. At the tail end of his life, Pretty Boy was balancing a fairly demanding schedule. He spent Saturdays traveling back and forth, greeting clients at the hair salon and purring for fans and families who stopped by to visit him after services at a synagogue in the neighborhood. Sundays brought children from a Ukrainian church. Standing before the Pretty Boy Memorial that one resident made with photographs and a vase of pink peonies, the resident conceded that the cat's death had broken his heart. "You get so hard living here, but pets open up that heart center. There's something about the unconditional love. They clean the blues off of you. That's their mission. That's why a lot of New Yorkers have pets." Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people don't get it. But it's good to see such a prominent article in the New York Times. And, you know, I only read a bit of this. There are pictures or all kinds of accounts of this, how this cat touched people. From just one half of one block, East 7th Street, between Avenue A, and First Avenue, on the south side of the street. If you ever want to see a part of the world where people really care about their pets, I think the East Village is the place to go. A couple of weeks ago, I saw... You ever see those dogs that have... they've lost the use of their back legs, so they have these little... wheel contraptions that kind of keep their legs moving for them, even though they have no support. And I saw this guy walking this tiny dog with one of those. And the problem was the dog's front paws also were not supporting him, so the dog just kept sort of collapsing onto the ground. But he kept trying. He didn't seem to be in any pain. He was just trying to get up and wasn't able to, and his owner just kept coaxing him with various dog treats and things, and people were just watching this spectacle. Someone trying so hard to keep their pet going. As long as they could. You see that kind of thing all the time in the East Village. You see all kinds of dogs being walked. You see them hang out in the dog run, and cats as well, the occasional monkey. So yeah, it's a New York thing. It's a thing humans have, but I see it particularly in that part of New York. And it's good to see a newspaper recognize that as well. All right, what else has been going on? Craziness in Albany. Republicans and Democrats attempted to hold separate Senate sessions at the same time today, leaving the Capitol in confusion and bickering as members of both parties shouted over each other on the Senate floor, each party claiming it was in control. You know, I used to watch how the student government here at Stony Brook worked, and I thought it was a travesty, but it seems to be a role model now. This is incredible. Though Democrats had entered the Senate chamber through a back hallway just before 12:30 p.m. and locked the doors, much to the surprise of the Republicans moved ahead with plans for their own session and began calling for votes on bills as Democrats sat silent in protest. I'm just wondering, how did they do this on those public access channels, you know, that show the state Senate? If they're doing, if they have two different sessions at the same time, they only have one channel for that. Anyway, exactly who was in control of the Senate or whether any of the procedural action the Republicans had taken was legally valid was unclear. Democrats were successful in blocking Republicans from taking control of the Senate gavel, which remained firmly in the hands of Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins of Westchester County. And she was guarded by sergeants at arms on both sides. Can't you just go down to the hardware store and buy another gavel and bang away to your heart's content? Seems pretty easy. Anyway, shortly after Republicans walked onto the Senate floor, their leader, Dean Skelos, called the chamber to order and asked one of the Senate Republicans' deputy leaders, George Winner Jr. What a great name for a politician, Winner. George H. Winner Jr. Called on him to take the podium. Mr. Winner, who was standing at the front of the chamber, attempted to climb the stairs that lead to the podium where the presiding officer stands, but was stopped by a Senate guard. Senator Skelos, Mr. Winner responded, I have been instructed by the sergeant at arms not to take the podium. Mr. Winner then walked to a desk in front of the podium, called the Senate to order from there, and began calling votes on a list of bills. Since Democrats sat silent and did not voice any objections, Mr. Winner claimed that each bill passed by a vote of 62-0. Then at 3 p.m., Democrats called their session to order. Well, I guess they did it in the same room. Okay, so that's how they were able to cover it. Following a proclamation issued on Monday by Governor Patterson to convene an extraordinary session. Mr. Patterson had hoped his move would help settle the leadership dispute, but control of the Senate seemed more in doubt than ever today. Republicans attempted to continue passing bills as Democrats called their moves out of order and moved to bring Senate proceedings at ease. Yeah, okay, that's our state government there. They're the people that ultimately run this place. State University of New York at Stony Brook. Yeah. Good, clean fun, you know, that's what it's all about. But there is hope. There is hope in the state of New York. Because it seems that that now more people than ever, more than half of the voters in this same state, back same-sex marriage. That's according to a poll released today. 51% of those surveyed by Quinnipiac University. Do they do anything else besides ask people questions? Quinnipiac University, do they? Okay. I've never heard of their football team. Never heard of anybody graduating from there. I know, I'm going to get letters about that too. I'm sure I should have heard about this. But all I ever hear is Quinnipiac University surveying people. And that's another thing. Why doesn't Stony Brook do this? Why don't we get out there and start asking people questions, huh? Why don't we get our names in the lights and say, according to a Stony Brook University poll, this number of people support this? And if it's a problem coming up with the questions, I've got a lot of questions that I'd like answered by the public at large. So we could start with those. Doesn't seem like it would be that hard. Yeah. Anyway, 51% support civil marriage between two men or two women. That's an increase of 5 percentage points since last month when voters were deadlocked. I think we even talked about this. And it doesn't mean that 49% are opposed. It means 41% are opposed and 8% are undecided. The results come as Governor Patterson pushes the state Senate to take up same-sex marriage during special sessions in the coming day. Good luck with that. Good luck getting them to take up anything. They can't even agree on who's in charge or when they can enter the room or anything like that. So, yeah, gay marriage. This might be the best time to get this passed. Anyway, so it's a slim majority, but same-sex marriage is ahead. And that's an important thing. You know, people ask, why is this important? Well, it's a basic human right. It's a basic, I don't really support the institution of marriage all that much. I think it leads to a lot of misunderstandings, hardships, things like that. But it seems like a basic human right. If people want to go down that road, they should be allowed to go down that road without anybody standing in their way. And it's not about forcing a church to do this. Churches can do whatever they want. Just like people should be able to do whatever they want. It's the equivalent of, and I haven't seen this happen. Tell me if this has happened. I haven't seen people stand up and say, we want the Catholic Church to be outlawed from refusing to marry same-sex couples. I mean, I don't think that's part of the whole thing, is it? Forcing them to do it against their will? Let them do whatever they want, but when they find out that their religion is shrinking, maybe they'll change their tune. But why should the Catholic Church have any say in whether somebody can go to City Hall and get married in a completely non-religious ceremony or with another religion that is a bit more open-minded? People shouldn't be interfering with other people. That's basically the premise of this whole thing. It's important. And, you know, it's especially important today because today's an interesting day. You know what today is? I bet a lot of people don't know this. Today is June 23rd, but it's also the birthday of one Alan Turing. Now, he is the father of modern computer science in the eyes of many. We've heard his name many, many times. He was a mathematician, a cryptanalyst, computer scientist, and he had this thing called the Turing test. He made a significant and characteristically provocative contribution to the debate, according to this Wikipedia entry, regarding artificial intelligence, whether it will ever be possible to say that a machine is conscious and can think. During the Second World War, he worked at Bletchley Park, Britain's code-breaking center, and was, for a time, head of Hut 8. That was the section responsible for German naval cryptanalysis. Oh, boy, I hate that word. Analysis of cryptography and stuff like that. He devised a number of techniques for breaking German ciphers, including the method of the... And how do you say that word? It's bomb with an E at the end. Bomb? Bombay? Well, I don't know how to say that. I really don't. I'm sorry. I've never had to say that word before. Let's just say it's an electromechanical machine that could find settings for the Enigma machine. Now, near the end of his life, Turing became interested in chemistry. He wrote a paper on the chemical basis of morphogenesis, predicted oscillating chemical reactions such as the Belousov Zabotinsky reaction, which were first observed in the 1960s. Interesting guy. Had a lot going on. But he was gay. And because of that, and because he lived in a time where it was considered both a mental illness and a crime, he was criminally prosecuted. His career came to an end, and he killed himself with cyanide. So you see, these things might not seem that important to those of us living in mainstream society, where our biggest challenge is finding what gas station has the best deal this week, or worrying about how your favorite team is going to do. But when you live with being told that you're not as human as the next person, that your very way of life is illegal, and even when we've moved beyond that, just to sense the disdain of the people around you, never quite accepting you for who you are, then yeah, it becomes important. It becomes important to stand up for every single one of these abuses that we see, these inequalities. They're everywhere. And we're all guilty of not noticing them enough. So that's, on this day, I think that's why it matters maybe a little bit more than on every other day, just to remember that. Now, something interesting is happening in China. China's first gay pride festival has been praised in the state media in a significant shift from the previous attitude to such events. Things do change. People change. Governments change. Cultures change. It's not a bad thing. It's called evolution. The festival was described in the China Daily newspaper as an event of profound significance and a showcase of the country's social progress. Wow. I mean, that is something. That's coming straight from the government. Film screenings, discussions, and parties were being held as part of the week-long festival in Shanghai. Being homosexual was officially labeled a mental illness in China until 2001. And before Shanghai's Gay Pride Festival got underway, which was earlier in the month, the organizers were worried that it might get shut down. They were warned by a lawyer not to hold a parade for fear that it might be seen by the authorities as a protest. Instead, they decided to organize a week of activities in private venues, and that low-key approach seems to have worked. The China Daily has carried a large front-page article about the event and about homosexuality in the country. An editorial inside says the festival shows how Shanghai, what it calls one of the most open and progressive Chinese cities, has displayed acceptance and tolerance by allowing the festival to take place. In the past, the official attitude to homosexuality in China might be categorized as don't condemn, don't promote. But this is a big step. Of course, a lot's still going on in China that is not a big step. And of course, the recent Tiananmen Square anniversary. 20 years ago, can you believe that? 20 years ago, we had Tiananmen Square. And if you want to listen to how we covered that here on this radio station, look no further than Brain Damage, which can be found at www.2600.com/braindamage, I believe. And you'll see an archive of that talk show, which aired from 1988 to 1995. And I remember we did a show right after Tiananmen Square happened. So we were talking about that for quite a bit. You can see how things have changed. But 20 years ago, and most people there don't seem to care. And if they do care, it's very well disguised. And that's because of fear. Now, Google is involved in this. For about 8 days between June 3rd and June 11th, Google.cn, that's the Chinese Google search engine, Google.cn, blocked all results that might come from searches for Beijing's Tiananmen Square. Not just politically sensitive results, not just historical accounts of the hundreds of deaths on June 4th, 1989, but every single result, including directions to the square, with an error message that read, "Search results cannot be displayed as they may contain contents that do not comply to related laws and policy." Yeah. Things returned back to normal about a week ago. Search for Tiananmen Square in either English or Chinese brought up links to shops in the area, historical documents about one of China's most famous places, and images of fun, happy times in downtown Beijing. but that's pretty much it. So how did Google know that it was supposed to drop the hammer on all results for Tiananmen Square for that brief period of time? And how did it know that it was once again safe to reapply the limited filter? Well, Google isn't saying, beyond pointing to previous interviews and statements it has given on its tricky balancing act in China. Google.cn complies with Chinese laws. Yeah. Well, one step forward, one step backwards. Here's a step backwards. And you know what? Let's open up the phone lines. 212-209-29. You know what? I did it again, didn't I? Why am I saying the phone number for New York City? I'm in some kind of mode here. You ever have that happen? I'm good, you know, with phones. I usually pick up the phone and I say the right thing. You know, like, depending on what phone or where I happen to be, I either pick up and say hello, USB, police station, whatever it is I happen to be at the moment, I get the greeting right. So why am I getting the phone number wrong? 631-632-9872. That's our phone number. 631-632-WUSB. I remember we had a guy on the radio once, a number of years ago, and I was listening to the show, and he gave out his home phone number. When he was giving out the number for the station, he gave out his home phone number. I don't know why, because how often do you say your home phone number out loud as if you're soliciting phone calls? But I think that was a tad embarrassing. just a little bit. Okay. We're going to hop into delay, and then I have something else to share with people as far as things that are going on in the world.
Hi, I'm Tom Prasadarao, and you're hearing me on 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook.
Okay, we're back. At least I assume we're back. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Anything you want to talk about, whether it's tolerance, whether it's insects, whether it's things going on in your life, we'd like to hear about them. But, okay, speaking about steps backwards, President Nicolas Sarkozy declared yesterday that the Islamic burqa is not welcome in France. Branding the face-covering body-length gown as a symbol of subservience that suppresses women's identities and turns them into prisoners behind a screen. Yeah, but there is a mixed message in the tough words, an admission that the country's long-held principle of ethnic assimilation, which insists that newcomers shed their traditions and adapt to French culture, is failing because it doesn't give immigrants and their French-born children a fair chance. Sarkozy said, "In our country, we cannot accept that women be prisoners behind a screen, cut off from all social life, deprived of all identity. The burqa is not a religious sign. It is a sign of subservience, a sign of debasement. I want to say it solemnly. It will not be welcome on the territory of the French Republic." Well, you know, this really smacks of intolerance like I've never seen. Now, you can believe that. You can believe that that the burqa represents that, and in fact, in many cases, it may actually represent that. But if you go around and you actually ask people who wear them if they want to wear them, I guarantee you a very large number will not say that they wish to be dressing in pantsuits or modern Western attire. They will not say that because this is part of their culture. And a culture that obviously the French do not understand and are not willing to tolerate. Now, yeah, there's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of oppression. But you can point to other forms of dress and other kinds of customs and say it means the exact same thing. Maybe not in a overt a fashion. But I'm sure you can look at any kind of a dress and say that, well, women wearing dresses means that they're sex objects, so that's something that's degrading to them, and we refuse to allow dresses in our country because of that. Or high heels. Or how about the custom of taking on your husband's name? Seems a tad bit subservient there. Yet that's accepted everywhere. So, you know, it's one thing to encourage people to be open-minded and free and all that kind of thing. It's another to impose your will upon them in the name of that. The big difference between telling somebody that what they're wearing represents something bad and helping those people that are actually being oppressed. And I'm all for helping anybody in any country who is living in fear or being told what to do by anybody. But that's very different than saying that if you're wearing a burqa, that means that you are oppressed, because it does not. One does not necessarily follow the other. And if you don't believe me, just round up some people wearing burqas and ask them when the guys aren't around. Bet you're getting an earful. Okay, 631-632-9872. More public opinion here, which is just lovely. Roughly half of Israelis support bombing Iran's nuclear facilities if international efforts fail to stop the Islamic Republic from developing nuclear weapons. 52% of Israelis say the country should bomb Iran's nuclear reactor, while 35% are against that. Wow. You gotta wonder, you know, what's going through people's minds? It's another country. You know, it's another country. Yes, they're not your friends. They don't agree with you. It doesn't mean that they're developing technology or even weapons or whatnot. It's a threat to you. And certainly, if you go around attacking them unprovoked, and I don't accept that their mere existence is a provocation, well then, I don't know. I just can't think of a way to even talk to people who believe things like this. What if it worked the other way around? What if Iran said, hey, Israel has nuclear capabilities. I think we should get together with all our neighbors and bomb them. You would have to accept that. You would have to accept that or accept the double standard. And yeah, so meanwhile, all kinds of fun things are going on in Iran. Protests seem to have been quelled, unfortunately. Republicans have been getting on Obama's case over his not saying particularly strong things, calling for the overthrow of the government over there and backing the demonstrators. But to do that would be literally playing into their hands and being able to point to the United States as meddling in their affairs, as the United States has done in the past. With the imposition of the Shah and things that basically led to the state that the country is in right now, led directly down that road. So it would be extremely foolish to go up and say that we support anyone who wants to overthrow this government. It would be basically saying exactly what they are saying about the influence that that this country has, the undue influence. And that's not to say that it's not already happening. How hard is it, actually, to use those Twitter feeds and to get out there and send fake information and get people to follow it, to encourage people to do things that will ultimately wind up in a crackdown? But at the same time, though, we as individual people need to do all we can anytime we see people fighting for justice, and there are many ways that people can do that. One site I found, and by the way, where are the calls? Is our phone working? I'd like to know the phone is working, because we had some trouble with it before, and I haven't seen a single call come in. Last week we had a bingo, so I know they're out there. So try the phone. I think I'm giving the right number out, 631-632-9872. Like to hear from you. This site is Iran.whyweprotest.net. Iran.whyweprotest.net. Basically, it's an anonymous Iran site where people can talk about various issues and spread information. But again, you know, it's the internet. This is one reason why all the blogs and all the tweets and all the Facebook and MySpace pages will never replace good old-fashioned journalism. Of course, yes, you have to trust the people who are reporting the news, which is why it's necessary for different news sources to exist. It's important that not everything get bought up by the same people. It's important that it not all be run by a government. What's important is that there be diversity, different points of view, and that the public pays attention to different points of view. If you listen to Democracy Now!, listen to something on Fox as well. That way you learn. That way you make up your own mind. Anyway, listen to what this person... You know, we still haven't seen a single phone call. I'm going to hit the button here. Okay. There seems to be a line. But are there any incoming calls? 631-632-9872. Listen, I understand the desire to launch an assault from your computer chair, but attacks like these, and they're referring to denial of service attacks, which some people have taken upon themselves to launch against various Iranian sites, attacks like these can backfire. The government officials and police can use it as evidence, as foreign involvement, and pull the plug on all electronic communication support structures. No tweets, no email, no SMS, no video footage, nada. The worst thing that could happen from your quote-unquote attacks is that somebody gets scapegoated, like a Tehran University student that is hosting servers, and then they're killed for their involvement in attacking government computers, all because you thought you were helping. A blackout or blocking of computer services is the last bleeping thing these protesters need. So please, for the love of God, refrain from stupid DDoS attacks. That's just one bit of information that is out there, advice for people wanting to help in Iran. Okay, I saw the phone lit up for a second, so I don't know if it's actually working. I'm going to keep the phone lines open for another couple of minutes. I have to assume nobody's out there. Nobody's listening. Nobody cares. I can see we've been talking about kind of boring things. We've been talking about people fighting governments, talking about the Chinese system of censorship and gay rights and mayhem in Albany and insects and animals and things like that. I could see why that might not be of interest to anybody. But you know what? You can call in and say something else. All right, let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, Manuel. How are you?
Good. How are you? Where are you calling from?
Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio. Wow. I like Columbus, Ohio.
Been there.
Yeah, I've been there a few times. What's going on in your fair city?
I was just sitting there listening to you. You didn't have any calls, so I thought I'd call you up.
Thank you for taking pity on me, because really, it's hot in the studio. You know, I'm not sure what's working, what's not working, and sometimes I feel like I'm just talking to myself.
I have a subject. I would like to know if you've ever been like a pundit on some kind of like news program, or you know, have any interest in that.
No, I've been my own pundit. You know, for the magazine, for the radio shows. But I wouldn't mind being one for you know, some other entity, just to you know, throw a different perspective into the mix.
Yeah, I think that you should get some kind of agent or someone to hook you up with that line of work, because. I don't know, you're good, you're far enough to the... I don't think you're so far to the left that you ever sound like an insane person, like a lot do.
Well, I can tell you that people who are far to the left do not consider me to be far to the left, so...
Yeah, right, you're you have a good mix, but I
but
think
I don't consider
be...
them insane. I just want to say I don't consider them to be insane, so that I don't want to be attacked for saying that, or condemned, or purged, or anything like that.
Sure.
Yeah, but no, it's some issues I go, you know, in one side. I just try to think everything through and see where that gets me. But I'd say I'm leftist, but I'm not a lefty.
Yeah, sure. And you say some things that I think a lot of Republicans would agree with, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I say good evening, and I think that's after that, maybe they part ways with me.
I think a lot of them have a little bit of sense.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and the thing is, you know, if you can put these differences aside sometimes to just be with people and hang out and share things that you do like together, so many people can't do that. And I see that particularly within the left. If you don't follow this particular person or accept this particular doctrine, then you're to be condemned as much as the enemy, you know, the full enemy. And it's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, particularly, I'd hope not to end up calling myself a moderate, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, it's got a lot of stigma involved. It usually means that you support gun rights, for example, or, you know, something like that.
That's what it means? I don't know. I always took moderate to mean that it was kind of rational. Maybe that has a stigma, too.
I guess I do. Yeah, the only reason I don't want to be called a moderate is because I am kind of in line with just like the far left in mm-hmm. so many ways that I would hate for liberals basically to think of me as not one of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, a good test for me is with any group, if I can find something that I strongly disagree with them in, then I feel comfortable that I'm not just buying into something. So if you find yourself describing yourself as a Republican, a Democrat, a right-to-lifer, you know, a pro-choice person, find something that you disagree with everybody else in your group with, and then at least you know you're an individual.
Yeah, exactly. That's
because there's got to be something. There's always something.
Yeah, there must be. I mean, otherwise, I don't know. I think the older everyone gets, you know, after they kind of get exposed to liberal politics. I mean, I'm speaking coming from a Republican household mm-hmm. and kind of awakening, you know, in my college years. I think that that's the way it happens a lot of times. And when you first go over that line, you're very militant and you're not very thoughtful, I think. And
right.
as you kind of are exposed more, then you kind of, I don't know, you just develop your ideas. And
well, some people think that you get more conservative as you get older. It doesn't necessarily go that way. I think as long as you keep remembering what it was like in the past and try to put that in perspective, not only will you have a well-balanced philosophy, but you'll also stay in touch with other generations and be able to communicate with them and bridge some gaps. Anyway,
good stuff. Good.
Thanks so much for calling. It's a great call, and we're out of time now. But
anyway, love you. Love your show.
Thanks for calling. And we're going to move on out. Yeah, it's been another exciting show. It's good to hear from Columbus, Ohio. It's the kind of music I think they play in Columbus.
Roll me to the shore.
We'll be back again. Actually, you know what? I'm not sure I'm going to be here next week. I might be out. I might be on tape. Who knows? We'll see. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned for Finn. Good night.
No more. She dug a hole.
kids. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.